Now here's a discussion of questions 11 through 18. Question 11, evaluate the following statement. Any change in consumption may be analyzed as a combination of an income effect and or a substitution effect. However, if dingbats are large in the consumer's budget, and the price of dingbats goes up, this creates a substitution effect but not an income effect. Well, you had to remember from lecture or remember from reading the text that any time a price changes in the real world, it has two effects. One is it changes the relative prices of things. That is the substitution effect. And the other is that it makes you richer or poorer. Now, how rich or poor it makes you depends on how big it is in your budget. If a price goes up 10% and it's something you only buy $4 worth of it every year, it doesn't make you a lot richer or a lot poorer if the price goes up. But on the other hand, if you spend 90% of all your money on some particular thing every year and that price goes up by 10%, that's going to have a very large and negative income effect. The cost of buying it is going up, you see. Okay? So, it is true that any change in consumption may be analyzed as the combination of an income effect and or a substitution effect. But it is not true that if dingbats are large, and the price of dingbats goes up, that this will not create an income effect. That's so the first sentence is true, but the second sentence is false, and that's the answer. Now, question 12. Decide which of the following statements are definitely true or false, and then choose the best answer from among A through E. The fundamental theorem of welfare economics tells us, and then there are four possibilities, four statements which we have to evaluate. The first is, tells us, the fundamental theorem of welfare economics tells us only a fundamentally fair economic system will be politically and economically stable. Well, first of all, I don't know if that's true, but second of all, I know the fundamental theorem doesn't say that it's true. Statement two, if certain somewhat technical conditions are valid, economic systems will be maximally efficient if all markets are competitive and the problems of externalities and public goods have been properly dealt with. Okay, that statement is almost exactly the statement we came up with in lecture. There are a few items missing. And so it might be tempting to say that that was false, but it's almost true. So remember it as almost completely true. Then statement three, as a practical matter, no economic system can hope to be efficient unless government takes an active role in managing the complexities of the modern economy. Well, again, I'm not sure that that is true, but if it is, I know the fundamental theorem of welfare economics does not say that. So that statement is false. And then finally, the fundamental theorem of welfare economics tells us welfare is maximized in the Pareto sense by appropriate welfare programs which are best undertaken by federal and local governments rather than state governments. Well, that's just a word salad there for you. And it has nothing to do with the fundamental theorem. Okay? So it looks like maybe only statement two may be correct, and all the others are false, and if you're really picky, then statement two is wrong also. So that would mean that all four of those statements are wrong. But when you look for a choice of answer, there is no answer which says that all the statements are false. You have to choose the best answer, and statement two is almost true, and all the others are obviously false. So the best answer is only statement two is true. If you didn't like that answer during the test and had come up to me and asked me and explained why you thought that statement was false, I would have directed you to go ahead and use choice A as your answer, and because it would be clear that you understood completely the issues involved, and I would want you to get full credit for it. Okay, question 13. Since both supply curves and demand curves tend to be less elastic in the short run than in the long run, then there are six statements. Now, you got to be careful on these questions. You know more than this about the short run versus the long run. You know that in my opinion, in the long run, the elasticities of supply are very elastic. So in the long run, in the short run, whatever the elasticity of supply and demand are, in the long run, the elasticity of supply is going to jump a lot. The elasticity of demand may not jump as much. So in other words, in the long run, the elasticities of supply jump more than elasticities of demand compared to the short run. You know that's true. But question 13 does not let you use that information. It says that both the supply curve and the demand curve tend to be less elastic in the short run. It doesn't tell you which one is relatively less elastic. So the question is, what can you know based only on that information? So statement one, the burden of a tax tends to fall more heavily on the buyers in the short run, but shift more onto the sellers in the long run. Well, again, that may or may not be true. In fact, it's exactly backwards. Now wait. Yeah, it's exactly backwards. But an accurate statement, as a matter of fact, it is not a statement that follows from the fact that supply curves and demand curves tend to be less elastic in the short run. So that statement is false. Now, statement two, the burden of a tax tends to fall more heavily on the sellers in the short run, but shift more onto the buyers in the long run. That statement is probably correct as a matter of fact, but that is not correct because both supply and demand curves tend to be less elastic in the short run than in the long run. It is correct because the supply curve is relatively less elastic than the demand curve in the short run compared to the long run. So that statement is false. Statement three, the tax is definitely more efficient in the long run than in the short run. Well, you'll remember that when we drew a diagram of tax efficiency, we're talking about the welfare cost triangle, the little triangles, the efficiency triangles. And I drew you a diagram in which I started off by drawing a supply and a demand curve, which were very steep for given tax revenue, so that the triangle was small. And when I made the supply and demand curves flatter, then the triangle was larger. So flat supply and demand curves make larger efficiency costs, and flat supply and demand curves are elastic ones. And we know that both supply and demand curves are less elastic in the short run than in the long run. And so in the long run, you'd have more elastic and therefore less efficient. But statement three says that the tax is definitely more efficient in the long run. That's wrong. Statement four, the tax is definitely more efficient in the short run than the long run. Well, yes, that is true, because in the short run, both curves are steeper. That makes for a smaller efficiency triangle. Statement five, a given tax will definitely raise more tax revenue in the short run than in the long run. Okay, we discussed this in lecture. The idea is that if you impose a tax, the prices change for both the buyer and the seller. I mean the amount that it costs the buyer and the amount the seller gets to keep. Both change in an adverse direction for that side of the market. In the short run, there's no way they can avoid the increase in price. I mean, not as much of a way of avoiding. But in the long run, they have more substitutes. The supply and the demand curves are more elastic, as we've been discussing. And therefore, in the long run, the buyer and the seller will be able to change the quantity they buy and switch to alternatives. And therefore, there will be less tax revenue. So that statement is correct. And statement six is the opposite. Will definitely raise more tax revenue in the... I'm sorry. Yeah, statement five is correct. Statement six is the opposite. Well, the given tax will definitely raise more tax revenue in the long run, and that's just backwards, so that's wrong. So of the six statements, statement four and five are correct. So your best choice is statements four and five are true, and neither one nor two are true. So there's question 13. Now, question 14 shows the diagram of the long-run average total cost curve and the short-run average total cost curves at various output levels. And this question states that this firm originally sets itself up to produce 300 units per time period, and now it desires to expand its output to 600 units. Now, the main point to remember about the short run versus the long run is that a firm must commit to a particular structure. And once it is committed to this structure, then certain costs are fixed. And from that point on, if it wants to increase or decrease, the process is a sort of a fine-tuning, which does not involve changes in any or all of the resources. So, you know, you set up a factory of a given size with certain machines, and once you've done that, you're very efficient at producing a particular size of output, quantity of output. If you try to produce more, it will cost you more. And there is a best way of producing more, and probably you're not going to be able to do it the best way if you've already committed. You have an office of a certain size. It would be nice to have more room by having more space, but you've already built the office. Therefore, the only way you can have more space is by building the shelves higher and that sort of thing. Squeeze more tables into the restaurant, run the machines in the middle of the night when nobody wants to run them, and so on. So this firm sets itself up for 300, and once it's set up for an output of 300, then the short run curves are all the curves which are awake, you might say, when the output when the firm is committed to an output level of 300. That is SATC1. Now, this firm desires to expand its output to 600 units. Well, why? Why? Let's imagine why that might happen. Well, probably people are demanding, there's demand for the product. I mean, maybe we're talking about water pumps, and it's Hurricane Katrina, and now a lot of people want water pumps. So suddenly there's more demand. Well, which curves are relevant if the firm is now wants to produce 600 per week instead of 300? And the answer is that since they've already committed to 300, in the short run they're stuck with the 300, with the curves that come down and just touch at the 300 output level. Okay? Now with those ideas in mind, let's take a look at the choices. One choice is, let's use the short run curve represented by SATC2 at first, but eventually start using SATC3. Well, remember that the short run curves, the relevant short run curve is always a curve which comes down and just touches the long run curve, I mean for the average cost curves. So the short-run, long-run average cost curve comes down and just touches the long-run curve at the output level the firm has committed to. The firm is right now at an output level of 300, and at that output level, the short-run curve is SATC1, so that first answer is not correct. Next, if the firm originally set itself up to produce 300 and now desires to expand to 600, it will use some other short-run curve not shown. No, that's not correct. It'll use SATC1. In the short-run curve represented by SATC3, both at first and after the long-run completion of the expansion, no, that's wrong also. And then the firm will use the short-run curve represented by SATC2, both at first and after the completion of the expansion. No, that's wrong also. I hope there's one more. Use the short-run curve represented by SATC1 at first, okay, good, but eventually, in the long run, start using SATC2 as the short-run curve. You see, this question was designed to teach you something. A firm may set up for an output level of 300. Then demand increases. Well, in the short run, you're still stuck with the short run curve, and your costs rise substantially to meet the demand. But in the long run, you will be able to change the way your firm is organized so that you can produce the higher output very efficiently. And once you do that, you'll have a different set of short-run curves. If you set yourself up to produce at an output level of 600, then the new curve, which is relevant once you've committed to an output level of 600, is the short-run curves which just come down and touch the long-run average curve at an output level of 600, and that is SATC2, and that's what that answer says. So the correct answer is, for question 14, is use the short-run curve. The firm will use the short-run curve represented by SATC1 at first, but eventually in the long run start using SATC2 as the short-run curve. Question 15. A firm has average variable costs of $60 per unit, average fixed costs of $40 per unit, and can sell its output at $50 per unit. And then we have questions about increase output, decrease output, shut down in the short run, in the long run, or whatever. Now, the main point to remember for any business: in the short run, you do not have to cover your total costs in order to make it worthwhile to produce. in the short run, if you've set yourself up in business with the wrong size business or with the wrong business, then you are stuck with a particular set of long-run curves and short-run curves. And that set of long-run curves, if the demand is not sufficient, there may not be enough demand for you to make a profit, so you'll be losing money every time period, even though you've set up your business the most efficient possible way. It's conceivable you can still be losing money. But even if you're losing money, that doesn't mean that it's time to shut it down immediately. Because if you shut down immediately, you will still have some expenses. You will save some costs when you shut down in the short run. But you will have all the costs of your plant and equipment, the stuff that you cannot get rid of immediately. It takes time to get rid of those things, and it takes time to get rid of those expenses. In the short run, though, if you produce instead of shutting down, that will cost you some money. If you can get additional revenue from that production, which is more than those additional costs, then you should go ahead and produce. I mean, suppose, for example, that if you do not produce, you will save $300 a week. You'll still be paying $5,000 a week, let's pretend, for the factory that's empty and sitting there and you have to pay the expenses. But you'll save $300 a week. Well, it's worth shutting down to save $300 a week, provided that when you shut down, you lose revenue which is less than that. I mean, if you save $300 a week, but you lose income of $400 a week, that seems kind of dumb. Well, those two numbers, the $400 a week is your revenue, average revenue, or total revenue. The $300 a week is your variable cost, the cost which you can avoid. And so you see that the rule for the short run is you're going to shut down if the revenue is not enough to cover the variable costs. But in the long run, your revenue has to be enough to cover all of your costs. So we have a firm in question 15 which has variable costs of $60 per unit, fixed costs of $40, and can sell its output at $50. So if it is producing, it will have, if it doesn't produce, it will have fixed costs based on the $40 per unit. It'll be whatever that dollar figure is, because now there are no units being produced, but there's a certain total dollars. And if it does produce, then it will add an additional $60 per unit of costs, and it will be able to sell the output for $50 per unit, which means that on every unit of output, it has a loss of $10 per unit. Well, you're better off to just lose the fixed costs, because the variable costs, if you decide to produce, the variable costs are not as are more than the revenue that you could earn. Okay, so this firm should shut down in the short run. Now, is it true that the firm needs to increase output? Unknown, but right now, based on these numbers, it should shut down in the short run. It should also shut down in the long run, because its revenue is $60 per unit and its total costs are $90 in the long run. And in the short run, its variable costs are 60, and its its revenue is 60, and its variable costs are 50. So it should just shut down, not increase. And one answer is the firm should keep operating in the short run. No, that's exactly backwards. It should shut down. And another possibility is two of the other answers are correct, but we've already gone through the answers and only one of them is correct. So the correct answer is the firm should shut down in the short run. Now, question 16. Evaluate the following statements and then choose from A through E. And then you have four statements about the wealth of nations or Adam Smith. Any of those key words should remind you of the first text written about the principles of economics, Adam Smith, The Wealth of Nations, published in 1776. That's an important year in American history, and so it's easy to remember the publication date. And so if you look at these four statements, The Wealth of Nations was written by Adam Smith, not Milton Friedman. It was written by Adam Smith, not John Maynard Keynes. It was published in 1776, not just after the Great Depression. And the fourth statement, Adam Smith is a famous economist who wrote in the mid-1800s. No. He wrote in the late 1700s. So all those statements are false. And the correct answer is none of the statements 1, 2, 3, or 4 are true. For the final exam, you need to know what John Maynard Keynes wrote, and you need to know what Adam Smith wrote. Question 17 has a table of the current prices in two countries, Rara and Gufonia. And then it has four statements about these two countries. The idea is that these two countries have never traded before, and now they're going to begin to trade. We have to figure out which goods should go in which direction, as if we are one of the shippers, one of the entrepreneurs, or international traders who's going to try to make money out of this situation. Well, you need to go back to my lectures on international economics. You can listen to recordings of those lectures if you want to. You need to look at the handout. There is a copy of the handout along with the recorded lectures on my website. You know the password for accessing those lectures if you need a review. But the first step in figuring out which goods are going to be traded in which direction is to take the prices in for each good, divide the price in one country by the price of the other, and make a row with those numbers in it. So I'm going to take the Rara price divided by the Gufonia price. Those are the trade currency conversion ratios. For good 1, 40 over 40 equals 1. For good 2, 20 over 20 equals 1. For good 3, 4 divided by 4 equals 1. And for good 4, 2 divided by 6 equals 1/3. So those are the trade currency conversion ratios. Now what we learned is that if you want to make money out of international trade, you find the lowest ratio and the highest ratio, and those are the two goods that you trade first. But I've thrown you a twist, because the lowest ratio is 1/3, but there are three goods which have the highest ratio. Which of those goods is going to be traded? And the answer is, there is no way of knowing, there is no reason to believe that any particular good is better than any other good. All of them will begin to be traded. The only question is, in which direction will those goods be traded? Goods 1, 2, and 3. all have the same ratio. They'll all be traded in the same direction. Well, if you try making money using the ratios that are shown, you'll discover that good four needs to be moved from rah-rah to goofonia. And goods 1, 2, and 3 need to be moved from goofonia to rah-rah. So we'll be a trader would pick one or all of goods 1, 2, and 3, buy them in goofonia, sell them in rah-rah, then buy good 4 in rah-rah and ship it over and sell it in goofonia. By doing that, it would be possible to make a profit. Okay? So, with that discussion in the back of your mind, let's take a look at the statements and evaluate each one. Statement one, all goods will begin to be traded, but only good four will be traded from rah-rah to goofonia. That is a correct statement. It's unusual because usually one good has the highest trade currency conversion ratio, and one good has the lowest. But in this case, there's that all the goods have the highest ratio, except the one that has the lowest. And so all those goods will be traded, and the good at the other extreme also. So all four goods will be traded. But only good four from rah-rah to goofonia. The other goods for trade in the other direction. Statement two, the first good to be traded from goofonia to rah-rah definitely will be good three, followed later by goods one and two. Well, there's no reason why the only distinguishing feature of good three is that the prices are low prices compared to goods one and two. But the price of a good, it doesn't have any particular meaning. So there's no reason to expect any of these goods to be preferred good for trading. So that statement is wrong. Statement three, the final trade currency conversion ratio in Raz divided by Goofus is the currency of the two countries after trade is built up to the equilibrium level will definitely be somewhere between one-third and one. Yes, that's correct. The trade currency conversion ratio is the raw price divided by the Goofus price, and we know from the lectures that the final trade currency conversion ratio will lie somewhere between the original extremes. The highest was one, the lowest was one-third, so we don't know exactly where the ratio will end up, but we know it'll be somewhere in there. So statement three is correct. Now, statement four, goods one, two, and three will definitely be exported by goofonia. Yes. That is true. The word definitely, of course, scares you at first in this course. I use the word definitely in a couple of questions, and it's you think, oh no, he always finds exceptions. But it's not always true. You need to be able to think for yourself. In this particular case, there's all three of these goods will definitely be exported by goofonia, under the assumptions that have been listed. So the correct statements are statement 1, 3, and 4. So that's the correct answer. And now statement question 18. A firm produces and sells a particular good. The firm discovers the own price elasticity of demand for its good is minus 0.25. By the way, do you remember that a demand of one or less, of less than one is inelastic, and more than one is elastic? I mean, by more than one, I mean more than minus one, more negative than minus one is elastic, less negative than minus one is inelastic. And depending on whether the elasticity is elastic or inelastic, a change in price may cause revenue to go in the same direction or in the opposite direction. For example, suppose that demand is very inelastic, so change in price will not change quantity demanded. If that's the case, then if you lower the price, you're going to have less revenue and you will not have an increase in demand, in quantity demanded to compensate. So when you lower the price, your revenue will go down. Therefore, if you are ever a business and you face an inelastic demand curve, do not cut your price because it will cause your revenue to go down. Increase your price instead. All right. In this particular problem, the own price elasticity of demand is minus 0.25. It is inelastic. Now let's evaluate the statements. The statement one, revenue will rise as price falls. No, that's exactly backward. Revenue will rise as price rises and fall as price falls. So that statement's false. Statement two, this situation will not last very long because the firm can make more profit by raising its price, which it will keep doing again and again until demand becomes elastic. I sometimes call this Andron's Law. Well, yes, I do call this Andron's Law, and yes, this is correct. In this particular case, the firm will make more money, will have more revenue if it raises its price. And also, if it raises its price, if anything, there's going to be at least some decline in demand. Therefore, the firm won't have to produce as much for its customers. And producing less, it'll have less cost. So it'll have more revenue and less cost by raising its price. It's made a mistake charging such a low price. It should raise its price. Statement two is correct. Statement three. Revenue will fall as price falls. Yes, that is correct. Statement four, revenue will fall as price rises. No, that's just backwards. And statement five, revenue will rise as price rises. Yes, that is correct. Okay? So the correct statements are statement two, three, and five. All right? So the correct answer is only statements 2, 3, and 5 are true. And that's the end of the discussion of questions 1 through 18. The next recording will complete the discussion of the remaining questions. Questions 19 through 26.